Hello, all. Welcome to the God Said Voice podcast. This is Patrick Barney. I'm one of the editors of Kai Drakonis Books. Kai Drakonis Books is an anarchist independent press that publishes socially engaged literature. We have a pretty cool poetry collection in the works right now. I don't want to give away the details because we're still in the initial stages, but I did want to just let everybody know that, you know, we've got at least one publication lined up for 2021. It's going to be great. You're going to enjoy it. It's going to be fantastic. With me, as always, are the other two editors of Kai Drakonis Books. That's Chris Malmberg and Hans Berger. And today we are going to talk about a novel called The Death of Vishnu by Manil Suri. I enjoyed this novel. I thought it was a really good read. I'm really interested to talk about the ending. I thought the ending was really, really interesting, and I'm pretty sure exceedingly tragic and devastating. Though I could see how you might not think so. So that's something that I definitely want to talk about. But it was Chris's pick, so Chris, you start where you want to start, but just keep in mind I do hope we get to talk about the ending.
Yeah, I think we should talk about the ending for sure. I'll start with just a kind of a summary. It's very simple. It feels kind of like a set piece or like a play almost, because it is so centered around Vishnu, who is... I can't speak to the caste system with any authority in India, but Vishnu, he lives and is dying on the landing between the first floor and the second floor of an apartment in India. This is, it's Bombay? Is it Bombay? Bombay. Yeah.
Well, I think...
It's interesting, just as an aside, it's interesting that they... In the book, they do call it Bombay, though. I remember being a little bit confused by that, right?
Yeah.
Because the Yeah, I don't know if that's a sign of the time period that it's set in, maybe. I don't think that the year is ever given, you know, but it's all, I mean, records, right? Like, there's not really any kind of contemporary technology in it. So I think it might just be set in a time when the name of the city was still officially Bombay.
Yeah.
There's oncology. I mean, there's cancer treatment, but it's not really elaborated upon. But the...
I guess it's... Strikes me as like the 70s.
Not very good cancer treatment, no.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah. So, Vishnu, though, he...
It's interesting that that's not addressed more directly, but...
Actually, something that occurred to me is potentially a value of the book, which is it did feel a kind of fable-ish, kind of, you know, like it was maybe conscious... a little bit of its own timelessness. You know, it occupies a little bit of a contemporary setting, but it's, you know, sort of that late mid-century span where like people have phones, but they don't have cell phones. There's technology, but I don't think that people have personal computers. It's a pretty wide and gracious window, for, you know, this to kind of fall within. But in any case, Vishnu is the title character. He's dying on the landing between the first and second floors. He's lived there for over a decade as a kind of a servant who's allowed to sleep there because he does odd jobs for the families in the apartment building. And there are three families, the Asranis, the Pathaks, and what's the third one on the top?
Jalals.
Oh, there's four families. The Jalals.
Yeah, there's also Vinod.
Vinod, who lives alone. So there's four separate households. The Jalals live, and Vinod live up above. The Jalals are Muslim. The Pathaks and the Asranis are Hindi, and basically, the story sort of weaves in between Vishnu's internal sort of dream state where he is dying because he's being neglected. No one is helping him. Occasionally comes up that he should be helped, but no one does. And again, it's a sort of a caste system thing that I really can't speak to. But he belongs to a lower class and is looked on with sort of disdain and resentment, more so than, I guess, empathy. The story again sort of weaves between his internal state where he's sort of thinking through different periods of his life, gradually, and it's sort of complicated, being nudged into this state where he's either imagining himself becoming, realizing that he is the god Vishnu, or just sort of getting that information from his memories and from the people around him, the other families. And so kind of becoming either imagining himself ascending or actually just dying. He's either imagining or it's actually like a story of actual kind of like godhood. You know, we can talk about that, but the families are where the actual sort of present conflict and drama occur. There's lots of really petty tension between the families, arising out of really mundane, not very, you know, like not nearly as dire as Vishnu, you know, slowly dying on the landing. But the daughter of the Asranis and the son of the Jalals are having a tacit unapproved affair, and they're planning to run off together. The Asranis and the Pathaks hate each other, especially the mothers of the families, because of just sort of turf rights in this building. And Vinod is in reaching a kind of a spiritual state about 20 years after his wife has passed, and he lives alone. And really that's, I don't know, like if there's more to kind of delve into, like plot wise, it just, there is a little bit of a climax when the son of the Jalals and the daughter of the Asranis do run off together, and, people in the neighborhood, spurred by some concern or some false beliefs that the Jalal family has conspired to do this, attack the Jalal family, the mother and father, we kind of reach the end of the book, reach Vishnu's death in the aftermath of that attack. Is there anything that I'm missing that you guys think is important, or?
That seems like a pretty solid summary to me.
Yeah. I mean, there are some details, but nothing that seems like of extreme plot importance right now.
Well, I guess like we can start with the ending, because we can start with two places. There's two things that occurred to me. One, these are very petty, unhappy people. Really, even Vishnu is not, you know, like we look on him with a lot of empathy, and it really is awful how little concern there is for his state. And it kind of, you know, you get the opinion that maybe the Asrani's daughter is the one who really cares about him. And then, like, we end with the Asrani daughter basically milking Vishnu's death for this,
right,
for this really meaningless, she wants to be an actress, so she's practicing crying.
Right.
Crying on command for Vishnu's death. And it just is, I couldn't help, it's weird. I felt like this story actually had a lot of heart and had a lot of like melancholy in a way and sweetness, even though the characters in it were so petty and self-obsessed. So I don't know if that's one thing to start with, or we can go with the ending too.
I have a question about that, like this idea of pettiness. So I'm wondering, can we draw a line between petty and non-petty characters? Where are they all sometimes petty and sometimes empathetic? Like, thinking of Vinod or Vinod specifically, who seems like the most straightforwardly empathetic. Like, he had a romance with his wife, and his wife died of cancer, and now he's kind of, you know, living his life and you know, just trying to kind of maintain the center, I guess. So I'm trying to think if there's anything that I can really see that he does that's kind of falls in with the pettiness of, say, the Ezranis or the Pathax. Is that right? Pathax.
I think there's a question here, like, what are we supposed to root for, right?
Right.
Because, like, these characters, the Ezranis and the Pathax are despicable. Like, they're really...
Yeah, they're not super great people, it doesn't seem like.
And something that occurred to me, if we want something even narrower, it was concerning to me that I really felt like, it was concerning to me. I felt like the women were especially bad. Like, it would, but maybe you guys could comment on this. But the Mrs. Ezrani and Mrs. Pathak are really kind of tyrants in their family, and I guess like the men are bad in their own way for being just really cowardly, kind of like they just retreat into themselves. They don't take a moral stand on anything, but there was something kind of in how the matriarch of the Pathak family and the matriarch of the Ezrani family seemed to mirror each other, and how overbearing they were, that actually kind of concerned me a little bit the second time reading this. Felt like maybe that was not aging well in terms of like, hey, let's just have these overbearing moms, you know, be the source of a lot of agony.
And then Kavita turns out to be pretty duplicitous.
Yeah.
And Padmini is, you know, pretty much just deeply shallow.
I don't know if we know that about Padmini. Maybe not. She's a sex worker, and we don't. Padmini is for the listeners who haven't read it. Padmini is a sex worker that Vishnu develops feelings for, and he's playing through a lot of their liaisons as he's dying.
Yeah, in his memory. They do seem to have some type of relationship that is like half monetary and half not, maybe.
I think about that moment where they've ran off together, and he's borrowed the Mr. Jalal's car.
Yeah.
And they've gone, and they're having a day, and we're not really given to understand whether she's playing with him, whether she's putting up with him, or whether she really cares for him. But I think we live too much in Vishnu's memory of the event. Vishnu is paying attention to himself in that moment when she talks about, he's basically saying, like, you know, he's suggesting that they could be a family. I think they have dolls, and he's just sort of play acting, you know, like this idea of being a, they're at a fair, and I think that they end up with a doll or something like that. And the and she reaches out to him, like, she, you know, she asks, like, how many kids that, you know, they would have, and he kind of laughs in her face. And I wondered about that moment, like, it felt like actually a really well written thing where it's, where you don't know that Vishnu is thinking, he retreats into himself, and he retreats into his own concern about his own future and how silly he must look in that moment. And then he laughs in her face, and then she's gone. Turns out that you laugh in the face of the person that you care about, and it doesn't work out.
Yeah. And
especially with that, talking about having kids. But,
and I do think maybe shallow is, like, I said that, but it, like, on second thought, maybe it's too quick, because you're right. Like, we always see Padmini through Vishnu's eyes, and of course he is going to see her as, you know, partly spurned, at least, because she is a sex worker. So,
yeah,
that's interesting. And she's always talking about food and eating food, which made me want to go to this South Indian restaurant north of Cincy, because they've got a lot of the stuff that she is always talking about.
Well, and I'd say that Shetal, Vinod's wife who died years before the story is set, she's great. Like, they're really, we get to, it takes about three quarters of the book before we get to a relationship that feels real, and it feels really real. Like, it feels genuine. It doesn't feel saccharine. They're not. Vinod slaps her at one point. Shetal is kind of silly and vacuous, and it's sweet, but she dies of cancer. Her last wish is to be in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah.
And, you know, but, like, they have this really genuine thing that I at least really respected. And I guess, like,
yeah, I thought it was endearing.
It was super endearing. What do we want for these characters, and why do we want it? Like, like, what is the kind of, like, I guess, like, the, I don't know. We know that Vishnu is dying. What is it? Why?
Like, yeah. What's the tension of this story? What's the narrative drive? Like what? Like, especially with Vinod, it seems like, you know, all of the tension is in the past with the death of his wife, and, like, it seems like a foregone conclusion that Vishnu is going to croak it. Yeah, it's super interesting. What do we want for these characters?
Well, I suppose we want some reasonable resolution of the tension that happens to Mr. Jalal at the end of the novel, where, and I think you touched on this somewhat in your synopsis, Chris, but the character of Mr. Jalal, even though he's grown up as a Muslim, he is sort of a doubter, an unbeliever, a seeker after truth by nature. He's familiar with the holy writings of a number of different religions. At the time that we meet him in the novel, he is, like you said in your synopsis, I believe, he has a vision of Vishnu as the literal god Vishnu, and decides that he's going to preach the literal divinity of Vishnu. And that, in combination with the fact that his son has run off with the Asrani's daughter, causes him to be pursued by a mob. And so there's a tension that builds up around, I mean, I think he is a sympathetic character, right? I mean, he's a little bit crazy and sort of silly. He's a figure of fun, but he's not despicable. He's not malicious. Right. And, I mean, if there is an emotional stake in the novel, I think it's partly just around wanting him to find some kind of place of dignity in the world, or at least not be beaten to death by his neighbors.
Right.
And so there's
But his wife is.
I think the,
his wife might be dying.
Well, his wife is beaten into a coma. Yeah, might be dying. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, I guess, in terms of what we get for an outcome. But I was trying to remember, before I read this novel, I was trying to remember, because we had talked when we first did the, when we chose this book, we had talked about the lack of plot-oriented tension implied in the title, right? Mm-hmm. You know what's going to happen at the end. It's it's like the world lit version of that novel, John Dies at the End, right? And so then with that established, what do you have instead as your source of tension? And my recollection was that there are a series of events that all kind of feed and build into each other that kind of build to this climax. And that is true to the extent that there is the pathok, or the daughter of the Esranis and the son of the Jalals running off together. I can't remember either of their first names. Salim? Salim and Kavita. Yeah. Salim and Kavita running off together. That creates the kind of question of where is Kavita, which leads to this mob having an encounter with Mr. Jalal, which leads to Mr. Jalal quoting the Bhagavad Gita at them and saying it was his own vision, which leads to them wanting to kill him with sticks. So there's that. Most of the novel does build toward that kind of explosion of tension, right? That climactic event. And we do want that to turn out in a way that at least spares as much misery and suffering as possible for the characters in the novel. So I think that there's some tension there.
I kind of, go ahead.
I had a thought that was going to push us in a different direction. So if you want to go ahead.
Yeah, I guess, well, I didn't really find, I don't know if I could really put this into words. I don't know why I ended up caring about these characters, but I did. And I guess maybe in our, when we do part two on the death of Vishnu, we can examine that further. I kind of feel like it's a bit of a magic trick because I wonder if it has something to do with the kind of the broader focus in the book on how we individuals play their part in some kind of larger, and I don't know enough about, you know, the mythological, the different mythological structures that like this book is referring to, that like, but basically like, there's some in Vishnu's sort of dreaming while he's dying, we experience at different times, specifically we follow one character, one figure named Jeev, who's reborn again and again and can't really control what they're reborn into or what they become. And then they just basically live that life. And I wonder, and there's something about that for me, I guess, these individual characters are maybe not, they're not traditionally endearing, but there's something about the context in which they find, in which the story provides for them, where I end up caring about them nonetheless. But I don't know if we can really get to that. And so maybe you should ask.
Well, I think that their flaws are, I don't want to say that their flaws are understandable, but there's an authentic humanity about the pettiness of the irritations that they have, right? The irritations and the fixations and the little ego trips that they do. All the things that make them, maybe despicable is too strong a word, but all the things that make them to some extent dislikable, are rendered and sketched in a way, I think, that does... It's subtly portrayed enough, it's authentically portrayed enough, that I think their humanity makes them appealing. And I think also, because they are, for the most part, fighting over things that should be relatively easy to resolve, that should be, they're fighting over things where some sort of resolution should be within reach. I think that makes it easier to root for the possibility that they might achieve it. And maybe this does feed a bit into the point that I was trying to make, which is, it may be that after I say this, it'll seem silly. Is this apartment building an allegory? Is this India? Like, in some sense, does the apartment building symbolically represent India itself? Or is that, I guess all the things I'm thinking of that would advance that as a metaphor, maybe the metaphor doesn't actually explain or reveal anything about them. But maybe it does tie into some of what makes us root for the characters and the resolution of their disputes, their issues, right? What I kept thinking is, you have the Hindi population in the building fighting against the Muslim population in the building. There are suppressed tensions which are overlooked but can easily erupt to the surface, right, over misunderstandings. And all the while, the spiritual tradition dies in a stairwell. But maybe that analysis doesn't actually require the building to allegorically be India, right? It's just that all the tensions and crises of India in transition are instantiated into the apartment building. The small looks like the large, right?
I have a question that maybe you can tack this on to your thought about this being a metaphor for India, or maybe you can take it in a different direction. What is the function of Vinod? Because, like, in the course of the story, Vinod does nothing to affect anything. Like, Vinod could be completely excised from the story. And then I wonder if it might speak to two different tracks for this question: the function in the story, and then like maybe a function symbolically, if there is no other answer.
Oh, geez, this is like really got my clock spinning. This is interesting.
Vinod doesn't even, so like Mr. Jalal reaches, he's being chased by the mob. He's convinced himself that he can withstand the pain of being beaten almost to death, and that will actually win them over. But actually, like, getting beaten sucks, and so he runs away. He runs away and he tries to climb out of his balcony, I think up to Vinod's balcony, and he's calling for him. And this is the one moment where Vinod might interact with the rest of the characters of the story, and doesn't. And Vinod never appears. The only time we spend with Vinod is when he's by himself. Right?
Kind of a counter to that question. What, aside from the fact that he's in the title, what role does Vishnu serve?
Yeah,
he's touché. He's not. I mean, he interacts a bit more with the characters. Maybe
he's the catalyst for all their pettiness, right?
Like, I don't know that he's the only catalyst for their pettiness. I mean, it seems like the catalyst for their pettiness is they squabble over the kitchen and their kids run off together. Now,
well, they also fight over.
There is the issue of. They fight over who will pay for his medical care and his ambulance, right. but that's not, maybe if you mapped it out bit by bit, that has to happen. Maybe that particular thing is like, I hate this cliche, but the straw that breaks the camel's back, right? So, I mean, he's a little bit more involved in the central action than Vinod. But, I mean, I think it is a novel where it allows itself a lot of detours, right? Yeah. It allows itself a lot of detours from the central action. And I don't know so much. You have three things running mostly in parallel without intersecting, right? You have the dying visions of Vishnu. You have the fight between the Pathaks and the Asranis and the Jalals. And you have Vinod coming to the end of a 20-year grieving process. And from a plot standpoint, each of those is almost or entirely, they almost entirely don't intersect, right? From the sense of events in one catalyzing events in another. Particularly, I guess one interpretive question you could get into is, does Vishnu's experience in his own dying dream world, right? I mean, you could construe what's happening to him essentially as his brain releasing DMT, right? His last dying hallucination or dream. But there is a brief overlap between that and the vision Mr. Jalal has of Vishnu as a god. But it's not totally clear if those are really causally related to each other, or if it's just that, Mr. Jalal is going crazy anyway and happens to have a congruent dream. Which I guess, I mean, if you accept that there's not necessarily plot catalyst happening between these three things, then it becomes a question of thematically, symbolically, how are they speaking to each other, right? And I think when I proposed the suggestion of reading the apartment building as an allegory for India itself, I think I was trying to find some kind of lattice that I could hang an allegorical or symbolic interpretation on to, right? And I think it's easy to say, in that framework, it's easy to say that Vishnu represents the spiritual tradition of India. It's easy to say that the conflict between the Jalals and the rest of the building represents the tension between the Hindi and Muslim populations of India, right? And there's a passing reference to a village being slaughtered, right? So we talked earlier about dates and timing. It seems like this is probably happening sometime maybe around the partitioning of Pakistan and some of the violence that happened connected to that. I don't know for sure, though. I don't know that I know the history.
That's much earlier than 1970, then.
Or at least close enough.
Maybe I'm wrong, then. No, there's a reference, I swear, to like a village was massacred this week. It's just one sentence, but I think that it's there. It's probably not the partition then. It's probably after the partition.
I think that there was, following the partition, I wonder if there was
violence.
Violence. I shouldn't suggest that there was, though, without knowing.
I'm pretty sure that there was. I can't imagine. I mean, I assume that there's been sectarian violence in India. I hope that that's not a bigoted assertion, but my impression is that there has been.
Well, they're neighbors with a country that there's been a lot of tensions with, and that seems like a fair assumption. But I'm curious, because like you say, like the religious traditions, that maybe that's a way to kind of get at Vinod. Because Vinod, did you guys buy Vinod's state of grace at the end, because it seems like at least one sort of sincere reference point for me that, and I don't want to say that, I don't want to suggest that this book isn't sincere. I guess that's one of the things about it, where like the characters are very petty, but they feel real, and it manages to feel sincere at the same time in a way that I think allows, is also part of why I end up caring about them, even though I don't like any of them. But going back to Vinod, I was really moved and convinced by the arc that takes him to that state of grace, is the word that comes to mind, but maybe you guys have a better word, 20 years after his wife has passed. And then that feeling like an authentic sort of spiritual experience, especially as compared to what Mr. Jalal is sort of believing that he's experienced and trying to push on the others. And then, you know, potentially Vishnu too. But what did you guys think about Vinod's epiphany, or I don't know what the right word is.
So I like the reading I think you came up with, that it exists partly to, that it exists partly as a contrast between Mr. Jalal's experience with spirituality and a more useful or authentic version of it, perhaps. And it, from a thematic standpoint, it might be that that's some, that, that maybe that is a function that that Vinod serves in the book, right? To suggest a way of moving more productively through grief and a way of more productively assimilating a spiritual tradition in a helpful way.
Yeah, that's, I think that's how I think about it. Patrick, you brought up the ending at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
What does anything like,
well, there, I mean, there are two parts of the ending that seem worth talking about, and one, that's the fact that we don't, there's no resolution, right? Like the Mr. Jalal falls down 2.5 flights and breaks his legs, and his wife is in a coma, and the Asranis and the Pathaks are trying to, you know, lie to the cops about how it happened.
And the cops don't care that Vishnu died. They only care that Mrs. Jalal might die.
Right. Yeah, they don't give a shit about Vishnu. You know, and I don't know, it seems like the only way that things get resolved in our favor is if Mrs. Jalal wakes up from her coma and corroborates her husband's story, because since she's in a coma, there's good reason to believe that they couldn't have like come up with the story beforehand, if that makes sense. So they like kind of corroborate each other, and that would be some evidence that all the Asranis and the Pathaks are lying. But we don't get that resolution. Instead, what we get is, you know, Vishnu dies. He kind of seems to enjoy some kind of very like a paradise, in the sense of like a place free of anxiety and worry, and it just seems to be a very mellow, chillax place where he gets to listen to the flute and whatnot. that he gets to experience for a few days, and he plays with this kid, and then the kid is like, yeah, but you have to go back in a couple days, right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah,
you don't get to stay.
you don't get to stay, dude. Sorry. So that seems...
Back to the hellhole.
Right, exactly. That seems like devastating to me. Like, Jesus. Like, seriously, he has to go back to this utter shit show that he was just a part of? Like, come on. So that's, like, that's interesting. I wonder what, you know, the fact that the boy says you've got to go back now, is that an indication that, I don't know why it would be, other than it makes a nice kind of symmetry. Is that an indication that Mrs. Jalal is going to wake up? Like,
oh,
you know, I don't know. Like, it feels like that would be a nice symmetry. Like, Vishnu goes back and Mrs. Jalal wakes up. But I have no idea if that is just me, like, wishful thinking. Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, like, I feel like a lot of this story feels like almost like what we want for meaning, and what would give us a sense of meaning, and what would give us symmetry, is basically like we could want it, and then it doesn't matter. Like,
sure,
not going to happen. I guess I see where you're coming from, and then it's like, no, of course he goes back, and Vishnu is a cruel corporate lawyer.
Right.
You know, that's it doesn't mean anything.
Right. Like, yeah. He goes back and it doesn't really have anything to do with anything that happened. Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
No. And I wonder if, like, back to the idea that Hans brought up, like the idea of the apartment signifying India, could it also signify levels of now this, I apologize to any listeners who are practicing Hindi or like know a lot about Hinduism, because I'm going to say things that just might not be true, but I feel like there are certain levels of existence in Hinduism. Does that ring familiar to you? Like there are certain levels of enlightenment or attainment, and ultimately, or is that Buddhism where we're trying to get to Nirvana?
Well, I think that Buddhism is I don't want to say descended from Hinduism, but it's like Catholicism and Protestantism. It's like a,
oh, is it?
It's very closely. Yeah, Buddha was coming from a Hindu tradition. And
oh, okay.
I think the ways that reincarnation functions in Hinduism and Buddhism are, but to my understanding, very similar. Although, again, I don't know really any more than you do. My understanding is that in general, Buddhism tends to be, it's not something that makes as many assertions. It doesn't kind of make as many metaphysical assertions about how things work, right? It's not necessarily as dogmatically oriented as a lot of religions in general. Different versions of it might be much more or less so. I think it's very broad in that regard. But it is, I do think that they both contain the basic idea of moving through different levels of reincarnation toward eventually being released from the cycle of suffering that is living in the world.
Right. So, like, I'm running with that idea.
So this apartment building is by that reading, this apartment building represents the ascension through different levels of being toward enlightenment and the eventual release from the world with Mr.
With Vinod on Tanasia
being that makes a lot of sense, actually. I mean, he does seem the closest to enlightenment.
And Mr. Jalal almost gets there, but not really.
Exactly.
He can't get out of his own way.
Yeah.
He's too Vinod. I mean, and Vinod, I don't know if we can entirely. Vinod's path is not something that he chose.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something that was forced upon him. If he were given the opportunity, he would rather have his wife and not be enlightened.
Right.
But he is forced into this path where he, that's where, you know, and that, and Jalal is trying to recreate, you know, he's trying to curate all of the different other, like, things that other people have, other prophets and great religious figures have done before him, to try and sort of like hack his way in.
All right.
And it's not enough. He's too much himself. I don't know.
And then it's interesting then that Vishnu is, he's not on the first level or the second level. He's in between.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
Damn,
Patrick's a fucking genius as usual.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and there's a reference at one point in the book to the name Vinod means happiness. I don't know how much that contributes to your interpretation, but I feel like it's probably not accidental.
Right. And you know, I'm just saying, like, that was a connection that seemed interesting to me. Like, I, you know, it could be all of these things or none of these things that, you know, the handsome, piercing gaze of Menil Suri is trying to get to, right?
Well, and you mentioned, like, the suffering of life, right, Hans? Like, because basically, like, the only escape is to kind of I want to say wheel of karma. I really don't want to misapply that term. I hope I'm not, like, because you basically, my understanding is you are not in control of where you end up, or even like very much of what gets you there or where you're heading. But you can sort of do the Vinod thing and just kind of like escape it that way, and that's it. That's like the best you can hope for. And that's, you know, is that wrong? I mean,
I feel like it probably, it's something where there's probably a lot of differences of opinion and interpretation.
Yeah, probably.
Right? I'm sure there's a version of it that thinks that.
Sorry, you were saying, Hans?
I forgot. I think I got to the end of my sentence, actually, so we're good.
Super interesting novel, though.
Yeah, I really am happy that I reread it.
Yeah. Did you want to? It looks like we're winding down, but it sounded like you had another thing to say.
Well, Patrick, you and I were talking about this, and there's the cinema at the end. Cinema actually makes a few appearances in this book.
Yeah.
You know, like going to the theater. And then there's this very weighted. It's weighted contextually because we know that Vishnu either has died or is in the process of dying.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just kind of like peering through his experience, trying to, like, you know, get a glimpse of what, you know, the afterlife is, at least in Menil Suri's opinion, and or how he's portraying it anyway. And And Vishnu is watching his own life in a theater with Padmini.
Oh, yeah. I liked that. That was really...
Yeah, it's a cool scene. I don't know exactly what to make of it. I don't really know that I want to make anything of it. It just felt... It felt really... Maybe what to make of it is that kind of distance from life. Like that kind of like... Vishnu is describing how he doesn't, as he becomes more of a god, he cares less about what happened. I think he has a moment where he realized I could just sort of call Padmini, but he doesn't care enough to do so.
Mm.
And that sort of distance from your own life, that kind of like where you can appreciate your own life aesthetically rather than just sort of suffer through it. Maybe that's a little bit of what that is.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's super neat. Huh. Good pick, Chris, though. Real good pick.
Thank you.
Yeah. Really,
I was very happy with it.
Yeah. Really, really enjoyable novel.
I think I remembered that. I remembered whenever I say you should watch this, it's great, or you should read this, it's great. Like, the thing that comes to mind is, I think I made all of you watch The Quest with Jean-Claude Van Damme because I remembered it was great. And it was really, really awful. Like, truly, sure, truly awful.
Sure.
And so I was nervous about that when we were...
Oh, yeah. I know what you're saying. Like, you remember something from a while ago and you're like, Jesus, my intelligent friends should realize how great my taste is. And then it turns out, and then you're afraid it's going to turn out to be shitty.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a persistent fear.
Speaking of that, did you guys ever watch LFO like I fucking told you to?
No.
No. Oh, you pieces of shit.
I haven't yet. No.
Oh, you fucks. Anyway.
I will.
Okay.
I will. I'm I'm in the middle of a break from music and I'm watching more movies because I'm doing that. So I'll probably watch it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, Menil Suri's The Death of Vishnu, really interesting novel. You know, seems like it's ambiguous enough to like support a few different trajectories of meaning, which is always great. Like when you have a novel that can do that, that's pretty interesting. So definitely enjoyable read. So I guess it's on to you, Hans. What are we reading next?
Yeah, so I had a pick, and then while I was reading Death of Vishnu, there's another novel that I've read a couple times that I'd flirted with the idea of picking for the podcast, but it just never seemed the right time. But I think that it might be an interesting... complement, right? It might be an interesting kind of follow-up to some of the ideas and themes in Death of Vishnu from a very different perspective and a very different tone. So what I'm picking is, it's by the author Jeff Dyer. It's called, sort of an unwieldy title here, but Jeff in Venice, Death in Varanasi. And I'll send you guys that in writing.
Interesting.
Jeff in Venice, Death in Varanasi. Chris, you might be a little familiar with Jeff Dyer because he wrote a book-length study of the film Stalker that you recommended to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever read it yourself, but yeah, fantastic. His book on Stalker is fantastic.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, yeah. And I've only read a couple things by him. I've read this novel.
Mm.
Both. I think the movie is one of my favorite movies, and I don't think I totally understood that until I read the book. It sold me on what is now one of my favorite films.
Man.
So yeah, I'm jealous. I'll be interested in chatting about it with you guys. So.
Cool. All right. You heard it, everyone. We're going to talk about Jeff Dyer's Jeff in Venice, Death in Varanasi?
It's a city in India, Varanasi.
Okay. So that's what we're going to talk about next time. So make sure you tune in. Until that time, peace out, comrades.